supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we have an impossibly jam-packed show for you this week, cats and kittens. When we get to the question of the week, we will tackle a topic that we don't seem to have handled in print in the past, which is what to do with weeds in walkways, the weeds that love growing between bricks and pavers. We're also going to have an inside exclusive look at this year's Philadelphia Flower Show with its designer, Sam Lemhenny. That's a lot to get done. We better hop right to your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Honor, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hello.
Hello, Honor. How are you?
Oh, I'm fine. It's a little cloudy here in Dayton, but nice weather otherwise.
Always a pleasure to talk to our friends in Dayton. What can we do for you, Honor?
Well, I've got a very odd garden. I live in an apartment complex, and the owners are very glad to have the patio tenants put gardens outside their patio. But I only have 4 hours of sunlight a day, 1 hour around noon when it shines straight down from above, and then an hour later the tree blocks it, and then no light until late in the evening when I get about 2 to 3 hours of extremely slanting light, and that's it. And I want to grow food, but the blueberry bushes are dying. The rosehip rose bush is dead. The only thing that survived is a couple of perennial herbs.
Right. And luckily, the herbs are probably a good choice. The truth is that fruiting plants, flowering plants, you know, which includes your blueberries and your roses, really need a minimum of 6 to 8 hours of sun a day. And it sounds like that end of the day sun you get is more like a sunset than it is like real sun. Roses, for instance, especially want a solid morning sun. They want like the first sun in the morning, and they want it to stay on them for that 6 or 8 hours. So, yeah, there's no way that those plants are even going to survive out there. And you got to be careful. You keep planting stuff like that, the Red Cross will come and give the plants lawyers and get rough with you. Herbs. Now, the herbs is an interesting situation. If you experiment with herbs and you find ones that actually survive out there, then I would say go to town. I was afraid you were going to tell me you were trying to grow lettuces or stuff like that, because there is a phenomenon where those kind of leafy crops will grow, but if they don't get an adequate amount of sunlight, say about 4 hours a day, they build up what are called nitrates and nitrites inside them, and they become not so much toxic but unhealthy to eat. So, but that's not going to happen with herbs. As much success as you can get, the herbs, I believe, will totally be safe to eat.
Okay, that's good.
Now, you're in an apartment. Is there an area nearby where there is full sun, where maybe a little raised bed garden could be built?
No, we're allowed only the strip in front of our patio, and it's every bit as big as a twin-size bed.
Oh, yeah, okay. How about in the area? Are there any community gardens?
There are, but they all get snapped up by February, and I never think of applying for a community garden in February.
Well, what I would do is I would go around to them all now or make contact with them now and get on the list for next year. Or, you know what happens often, I hear this from my friends at PHS, the Pennsylvania Horticultural Society. They run one of the most successful community garden programs in the Philadelphia area, is a lot of times people do reserve these beds. They start out with great intentions, but then they move or lose their job or get depressed or just don't show up. And they often have a couple of unclaimed beds. So this is a case where you snooze, you lose. You might get into one this year. You would certainly get in the following year, and you wouldn't have to be thinking about it in February. But that's the real answer for people who are growing or have that desire to grow and they live in an apartment is get into these community gardens near you. There, not only do you then have a place to grow whatever you want, your roses, your blueberries, your greens, your herbs, but you have this great camaraderie with other gardeners.
Yeah, I've been involved in community gardens in the past, and I found myself being hired, so to speak, to tend gardens during vacation in exchange for all the produce that came ripe during those 2 weeks.
Well, and you know, maybe you just answered your own question. Maybe even if you can't get a bed in a garden this year, you hang around, you chat the people up, you let them know that you're available, and then they're growing the food, and all you have to do is go pick it.
And weed it and water it. But yes, exactly.
Well, you'd have to do that for your own. I think you're on to a great plan here, Honor.
Okay.
All right, so good luck with your shade. Good luck getting into a community garden.
Well, bestie, friend.
All right, take care.
Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Kevin, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you, Mike. Thanks for taking my call, and pleasure to speak with you. Your program is excellent.
Thank you, Kev. Where are you, sir?
I'm in Warminster Township, Bucks County, outside of Philadelphia.
Okay, very good. What can we do for you, Kev?
I have about a half-acre property, and there's one area in particular, which is my, sort of hangout area with, you know, tables and do barbecuing, and it's the shady area. And there's a couple trees there, one being a very nice mature dogwood, about my favorite tree. And then there's a maple tree, a mature maple, and there used to be a cherry tree there. So it's always been pretty shady. Underneath the dogwood in particular, there is just a whole lot of moss. And I'm just wondering if it's possible to eradicate that and be successful with it coming back all the time, because I've tried a couple of things, including going around with the dethatcher, and I got a lot of it up, and I did some more raking, et cetera. But it's pretty pervasive in coming back.
Well, nature is trying to tell you something, Kev.
Okay.
You know, that's the ground cover of choice in areas that are shady, acidic, and drain poorly. So back there, you have an area that is relatively wet despite the roots of those trees, which means it would be really wet without the trees sucking up some of that water. The soil is extremely acidic and there's very little sunlight. So if you go to the book and say, what can I install in an area with very little sunlight, very acidic soil, and a lot of moisture, the answer is moss. And you look at moss as a weed because you have this desire to do something different. But in reality, it is a underutilized plant that's getting utilized more and more. Moss gardens and moss lawns have been taking off like mad for the past couple of years. There are specialty moss suppliers. There are people who, after fighting the moss for years and years, lean into it and then suddenly realize once they stop fighting it, they have a ground cover that is green all year long, never needs to be fed, and never needs to be mowed.
Right.
So I can tell you that if you want to get rid of the moss, all you have to do is raise the pH of the soil by spreading wood ash or lime around. Get the soil up to neutral, and the moss will not be able to survive. However, your dogwood will not like that at all. Your dogwood is thriving in the exact same kind of soil that moss thrives in. So the fact that you have moss shows me that your dogwood has a nice, healthy soil around its roots. What I would
say. So then I guess the other question would be, then if I was going to leave the moss, then I almost then want to increase it because I don't want to leave it sparse in the other areas or that area where it's gotten a little bit muddy.
What you can do is you can actually take some of your own moss, put it into a blender with some water, add a little buttermilk or beer, and then at sunset, go out and spread this slurry around in the areas you want the moss to cultivate. You can also buy moss. Moss is very hot horticulturally right now. There's a company really not too far from you. It's up in the Poconos called Moss Acres that supplies moss in rolls of sod, dried to be reconstituted in a manner in which I just described. They also have a video showing you how to take your own moss and really make it thrive and fill in its own bare spots. Take a look at your options, but that's what I would suggest.
Yeah. Sounds like a good strategy. Okay.
I think when you start to research this, you'll see that it's a really popular trend.
Great. I thank you so much, Mike.
All right. Good luck, Kev.
You too. Thank you.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that I will appear at the fabulous Philadelphia Flower Show at 4 p.m. on Wednesday, March 15th. This year's show runs March 11th through the 19th at the Pennsylvania Convention Center in downtown Philly, with me on stage at 4 p.m. on Wednesday. But don't go looking for all the details at the events section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back with Sam the Sham, who designed said show. A saucy solution to walkway weeds and more of your saucy phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by the Espoma Company, offering a complete selection of natural organic plant foods and potting soils. More information about Espoma and the Espoma Natural Gardening Community can be found at espoma.com. And by Burpee, celebrating their 140th year of providing treasured heirloom varieties, hard-working hybrids, seed starting, garden supplies, and more. Burpee offers no treated seed or genetically modified organisms. Information at burpee.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, it's a problem that many people have. They have wonderful walkways or patios made out of bricks or pavers, and weeds just love to grow in the little cracks between those bricks and pavers. We will explain how to turn this problem into an opportunity. And we'll take more of your fascinating phone calls. But as promised, here we are on the eve or the opening day or a day or two into the first day of the Philadelphia Flower Show, whenever you are hearing this show. But it is Flower Show Weekend in Philadelphia. Flower Show Weekend is actually two weekends. The famed Philadelphia Flower Show runs to the 19th at the Pennsylvania Convention Center in Center City, Philadelphia, making it nearly impossible to get into Tommy DeNick's to get a good beef and green sandwich. And when I say greens, I mean broccoli, Rob, not any spinach or anything like that. So I have to go 10 days without a Tommy DeNick's. And yet, I still enjoy the company of our dear friend across the table from me, Sam Lemheny, designer of the Philadelphia Flower Show and a frequent guest and longtime friend of the show. Sam, welcome back to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you, Mike. Thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure.
Well, thank you for being had. That part's always a pleasure for me, too. Now, Sam, I want to drop back for a minute before we start talking about this year's show, which is focusing on Holland and the Netherlands.
Correct. Flowering the world, Holland.
Well, yeah, okay, well, we'll go right to it then, because I was in Holland and most of the Netherlands back in the early 90s.
Okay.
And even back then, one of the things you noticed as you flew in was like a third of the country is under glass.
Under glass and also planted in fields of tulips or hyacinths or daffodils. It's really absolutely amazing the color that you see. If you've been out to the Midwest and see the miles and miles of cornfields here in this country, they have miles and miles of greenhouses as well as fields just growing bulbs and tulips, and the color is absolutely spectacular. And we're going to give you a little taste of that at the Flower Show this year.
Yeah, and as you and I have seen, because you've flown in and out of there many times during the bulbing season, it doesn't look real. It's like you're flying over giant paintings.
It really does. It looks like it's been painted onto the ground. It's just gorgeous as you fly in. And then when you get closer, you obviously can tell that it's tulips or hyacinths or daffodils. But it is absolutely amazing, absolutely gorgeous. And I recommend it highly.
So riddle me this, Flower Show Cape Crusader. I spent a lot of time in the Netherlands when I was out there for Holland. And one of the places we were – actually, we were based in The Hague when I was there.
Okay.
And as you know, there's some North Sea beaches in that area.
Yep.
I use the term beach about as loosely as possible. It's an area where the ocean – meets the shore, but
I didn't see too many people swimming when I was there.
I don't think anybody ever swims in it. And the water is cold, and the country is beautiful, but somewhat godforsaken. So was it just impetus? Was it just pride? Was it just dominance? Was it just ignorance that they decided that they would not only grow all the flowers for the world, but like half the food as well? Because the climate is exactly opposite of thinking that.
Well, I think their innovation and their ingenuity is definitely something that comes forth. When you start doing the research, and like we did on this flower show a couple of years ago and looking at it, you know, the windmill. The windmill is certainly an icon of Dutch and the Netherlands nowadays, but it was way ahead of its time. It was so innovative of moving water from one area to another to try to protect the gardens and protect the land so that they could be farmed. They were so far ahead of time, and their ingenuity of – they knew that the tulips were from the Middle East, basically, is where the native
species godforsaken mountains of Turkey and Afghanistan.
Yep, they discovered them in Turkey, and they brought them into Holland. And the sandy soil, which is actually their location, actually was a blessing. The sandy soil actually helped them grow. It had very high organic matter in it as well, too, which is perfect for the bulbs. And they actually grew very well, and then they just started to use some of their entrepreneurship, as the Dutch have always been, in their travels and their shipping and then their trade. The bulbs became one of those things that they specialized in and created some of the most beautiful flowers on the planet.
So I think there's maybe a fear or a thinking, oh my God, how many tulips can I look at in a single afternoon at the Philadelphia Flower Show? And I think the answer to that question is 30,000.
We have 30,000 bulbs in the entrance garden alone. So
there's
more than 30,000, actually. Yeah,
yes, there's more. We'll double that order.
I don't think you can look at too many bulbs. You know, when you go to Holland and you fly in and you see those, it's millions and millions of bulbs. And so I don't think people can get enough of it. We have some great varieties, some great color schemes, from oranges to peaches to pinks to some of these really dark, almost black lavender colors, and some two tones of colors. It's just going to be amazing for you to see. We'll have them all labeled so you can see them and you can take notes and hopefully try to add some to your garden in the future. There will be 30,000 tulips, Mike, but it's going to be so much more. You'll see so much more from Holland and from the Netherlands that you've never even thought about.
Right, because I think one of the things that you did deliberately to balance this idea of, quote, it might just be spring bulbs,
right,
is bring in all this sustainability. You have to be sustainable when you're growing this much stuff in a place where it's dark 3 months of the year.
Yeah. Absolutely. We've worked with the Dutch government, and we're very lucky that they've seen the flower show as an opportunity to tell their message and tell their story of innovation and green, sustainable design, as well as the practices in horticulture that they use. And so we are bringing over this EcoDome, which is a 70-foot diameter, 36-foot tall dome that will house a number of innovative ideas and concepts and organizations that will be able to tell you the story, and you'll be able to get information there. Different plants that are in there, different growing techniques that are in there, living walls. There'll be videos and handouts and people doing presentations. And so it's going to be a really special piece, and that's right behind the entrance garden. So it's really almost the center of the show.
Well, it sounds like it's going to be the center of the show. Yes. There's a lot of buzz about the EcoDome.
Good. We like to hear that.
Now, for those listeners out there who may be in Oklahoma City or Saudi Arabia at this point, I mean, we get emails from just about everywhere. Why are we talking about the Philadelphia Flower Show? Because it is the oldest flower show in the world. It's the largest indoor flower show in the world. And don't one-third of, quote, our guests come from outside the greater Philadelphia area?
Oh, yes, absolutely. So there's probably 50 to 40% of the audience comes from about 100 miles outside of all up and down the East Coast. We have visitors from almost every state each year and probably about 10 different countries that come to the show every year. We like to think of it as the Olympics of horticulture, of gardening and design. It's a really special show. It's a long-standing tradition since 1829, Mike. So we've been around for a long time, but we're still kicking and still showcasing some great plants and great gardening tips for everybody. If you've never seen it before, it's not a traditional flower show. This is an entertainment experience that uses plants and flowers as the stars of the show. It really is a show.
It's a show. Yep.
It is a place to go and see spectacular, amazing displays and design and color. It is a place to go get gardening information, though, too. You want gardening? We have the latest, greatest techniques, trends, tips, speakers that you can come in and really experience as well, too.
I'll be speaking.
As well as you, exactly.
I'll be speaking on Wednesday, March 15th at 4 o'clock in the Gardener's Studio on the Flower Show floor, free with Flower Show admission.
So see, you can't get better than you, right? We got the top of the top in the entire country when it comes to horticulture experts speaking at our show.
Now, when I was a major exhibitor in the Flower Show, one of the things I think we were required to do, but I loved doing it, was our designer would make a scale model our exhibit, and we would bring it to the PHS headquarters in Center City, Philly, and you know, put it on a table, and you know,
get down on your hands and knees and try to pretend that you're down in the exhibit. Right?
Oh no! I was going to say light incense and candles, and you know,
we do that still, but it's all in the computer now. With the computer aided design programs we have now, you can do the 3D models all on the computers, and you actually can fly through and walk through. It's so different now with technology, and we're able to actually experience the show before the visitor even takes one step in, and actually change the design based on what we see, where we're standing, and what we're looking at. It really is an amazing world right now that you used to be building models out of cardboard and paper, and now you're designing it all, and it looks just like you're going to see it when you walk into the show and be able to walk through that and experience it before you even walk in. I like kind of some of the surprise in the past, but it helps us from a design standpoint. It certainly helps us from an experience standpoint for the visitor.
Now, a couple of months ago, you sent us an image of the central exhibit that now I'm guessing is CGI and was not a little model of some kind.
Right. It is a computer. We do renderings by hand and then computer enhance them because that sort of is the look that I like. I like sort of that still that hand-drawn look that you get when you do it, start it in a drawing, and then you turn it into the computer and then you can make it into a model.
Well, the entrance to the show, the first thing people see, and then the central exhibit are so key to the experience. I remember when you did the national parks
last year,
those giant hanging timbers in the ceiling that just look so massive and like an ancient Roman ruin of some kind. And you said, they weigh about 30 pounds a piece.
Right. I could pick up one and just sling it over your shoulder. That's how light they were. Yeah, it is about the show. And we talk about that. It is theater. And we produce things to look like they've been there forever. And we age them to make them look like they've been there forever. And this year at the entrance Prince Garden, we have a bridge similar to what you might find when you walk through Amsterdam, and that, you know, romantic walk along the canals and you walk across the bridge. Well, this bridge is going to be completely decked out with window boxes, hanging baskets, floral, bikes, lampposts. That'll be the first thing that you see when you walk in. Then you can actually walk underneath the bridge. You can't walk on top of it. It's a little too steep for us, and so we'll have to be able to walk under it. But it's still an amazing experience when you walk under it. We'll have Delft tiles. We'll have mosses and succulents and to kind of help mimic the Delft tiles that are there, so we can get that sort of light blue look which you get with the succulents. So, and then you see the windmills, and it's just the windmill sails, but they're 30 feet tall. That'll create a windmill sculpture with floral on it. There'll be lights on it, LED lights, and every half hour the garden will come to life with lights and action and music. The big special piece that we're really excited about.
No. This other stuff has been nothing.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Right.
The on top of the 30,000 bulbs that we have in there as well, too, the floating flower fields. So when we talked about earlier, you're flying into Holland and you're seeing those miles and miles of bulbs. We were like, how do we create that? You couldn't create that on the ground. You just don't have enough space in the convention center.
Be like the old Wanamakers. You get a monorail that goes around the ceiling.
Wouldn't that be great? If I could figure that one out and the cost to figure out the cost benefit of that would be amazing. But anyway, this hanging floral fields, we basically flipped it upside down so that we kind of gave a forced perspective of flowers over your head, so it looks like the flowers go off into the distance. And there's 4,000 plants that or flower clusters will be hanging over your head. So it's a giant floral arrangement of over 4,000 strings and floral clusters that create this wave that you walk right underneath and feel like you're under a canopy of flowers. I think it'll be the showstopper this year.
And then there's how many acres of the, quote, regular major exhibits.
Yeah, the whole show floor is about 300,000 square feet. So that's huge. It's over 10 acres worth of exhibit space that we have. About 50, 52 exhibitors on the show floor, from our professional landscape designers that do the big landscape designs, the professional florists, to our educational exhibits that the colleges and the schools that do their exhibits that are much more educational. We also have our design gallery, which is really, the design gallery has changed over the last couple of years to really gear towards people that don't have a lot of space for gardening. So we want to show you some creative ways to garden in a windowsill. If you only have a windowsill to garden in, garden on a balcony, garden your front entrance. So we'll showcase that, and that's what those exhibitors will showcase. And of course, the horticort.
The Olympics of plants
is the horticort, where we have over 5,000 plants competing against each other. And
this is just jamokes like me grew in their basement or something like that.
Absolutely. There's a lot of them that are grown in their basement. Like you said, you forced some bulbs this year, I think you told me that.
Yeah, and, I had bulbs like everyone else in the world. I had like 3 bags of spring bulbs left over in October, and I'm getting tired of planting. And I got all these pots that I've killed plants in. So I just, you know, take the dead plants out of the pots, put like 1 bulb in a little pot, 5 bulbs in a medium-sized pot, watered them really well, and then put them inside like plastic containers just to catch the water.
Correct.
And put them in the beer fridge down in the basement. And I must have filled up like 8 pots. And I started bringing them out around Christmas time after 12 weeks for the daffodils.
Yep.
So I look like a genius. This thing is forcing is so easy. I've got daffodils in rapid succession. Now I'm bringing up the tulips.
Sounds like you have a mini flower show at your house.
I do.
We're doing this.
I don't think I had any skill at this stuff.
Yeah, a couple of weeks ago, going to the greenhouses and seeing all of the bulbs growing and knowing what it takes to force the bulbs, and it's, you know, you grow them, you put them in the coolers ahead of time to trick them that it's winter, and then you pull them out in the greenhouse and heat them up to grow, trick them into spring. And then if they, depending on how fast they grow, Mother Nature is always fickle. None of the bulbs grow as fast as the other bulbs, so they're always growing at different rates. You're pulling the bulbs that are just about ready to crack flower, and you're putting them back in the cooler to slow them down again. So
yeah,
we are playing a little bit of Mother Nature here at the flower show, but we do it all for the show.
This game has been being played
for almost 200 years now. Absolutely. It's what we're known for, is forcing the plants, when most of the other flower shows in the world are in springtime and then the summertime when they have full access to full plants. We have a special treat for you after the winter, before spring hits. You get to come to the flower show, come to the convention center, and see spring happen. It is the first taste of spring that you'll get, and you'll know that spring is right around the corner when you come to our show.
And I will point out, best time to see the show is beginning in the early afternoon.
Yep.
Show up around 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon, get your hand stamped, wander around, get overwhelmed. then take a break, fight your way into the Reading Terminal, or there's bigger and bigger food courts at the show every year.
Correct.
You don't have to leave the building. But then come back in, and by 5 or 6 o'clock in the evening, there are no crowds. I mean, there's always people around, but
Correct.
You can walk right up to the front of the exhibit. You won't get elbowed by some little old lady like you will at 10 a.m.
Whenever my friends or anybody asks me when the best time to attend the show, and it's after 5 o'clock for me, it's the best time to go see because, like you said, the hustle and bustle has sort of died down. The bus tours have now all loaded back up and are heading back home, which we love the bus tours. But it's a great time. You can grab a glass of wine and just or grab a beer and just enjoy the show and walk around. It's a great date night. It's a great, you know, night out for those who have been working hard right after work to just come over to see the show.
And we're
open until 9 o'clock, so
yeah.
You can stay as long as you want.
Yeah, no, it's a great deal. This sounds like a fabulous show. When you sent us the image of
yes.
the entrance, the bridge,
yes.
we put that up on the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page.
Great.
And it garnered more hits than anything we have ever had.
Really? Wow.
On that page.
That's exciting.
People were fascinated
by
it.
Well, then you saw it on paper, you saw it on the screen. Now you got to come and see it in person because it's fabulous and really special.
Oh, you know I'll be there. All right, Sam Lemhenny, the designer of the Philadelphia Flower Show. This year's show is Holland Flowering the World, and it runs from March 11th to the 19th at the Pennsylvania Convention Center in Center City, Philadelphia. Sam, thanks again for being on the show.
Mike, thanks. It's always a pleasure. Love talking to you. Have fun.
Well, now it's time for me to take a little break and announce that I will appear at the fabulous Philadelphia Flower Show at 4 o'clock on Wednesday, March 15th, at the Master Gardener's Spring Symposium in Fayetteville, North Carolina on March 25th, and in beautiful State College, PA, April 6th through the 8th. But don't go looking for all the details at the events section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back with a novel solution for walkway weeds and more of your weedy phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by the Espoma Company, offering a complete selection of natural organic plant foods and potting soils. More information about Espoma and the Espoma Natural Gardening Community can be found at espoma.com. And by Burpee, celebrating their 140th year of providing treasured heirloom varieties, hard-working hybrids, seed starting, garden supplies, and more. Burpee offers no treated seed or genetically modified organisms. Information at burpee.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we're in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a little bit, we will get to a topic that addresses a major issue for people who enjoy their outdoor spaces. What do you do with the weeds that grow up in the cracks between bricks and pavers? We will turn this seeming problem into a growing opportunity. after a couple more of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Warren, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, thanks so much for having me on.
Well, thanks for being had, Warren. Where are you, sir?
We are located in Westchester, Pennsylvania.
All right, so what can we do for Warren in a little piece of God's country?
Well, we just moved here, and I would like to start a garden from scratch. I've never gardened before.
Okay.
I've got a little plot of land, gets plenty of sunshine during the day, and I want to know what do I need to do to get started.
What do you want to grow, Warren? What interests you? I presume you're talking about a food garden.
I am. I'm talking about a food garden. I'm a chef.
Oh, excellent.
And I want to grow peppers, and I want to make pickles, and I want to have beets and all kinds of veggies and lettuces and things like that.
Okay. There are two seasons. There is the high summer season where we grow cucumbers, which of course then become pickles for you, peppers and tomatoes. Things like salad greens, like lettuce and spinach, they grow in the spring and the fall, but they bolt in hot weather. So this concept of growing your own classic American salad of lettuce and tomatoes, those things really don't cross over in physical reality until the very end of the season. So in a situation like yours where you don't have anything in yet, you definitely want to build a raised bed. You can buy frames that are already pre-made. You can use pavers. But you want to outline areas, frame up areas that are no wider than 4 feet because you're never going to step into these beds. You want to be able to reach the center from either side. And they can be as long as you want. The classic size is 4x8 because that utilizes standard lengths of lumber. You get a bunch of 8-foot pieces of lumber, you cut some of them in half, and boom. All you got to do is join the corners together.
Okay.
You can use any kind of naturally rot-resistant wood. Don't take anybody's old railroad ties. Don't get started with that. You can use pavers, which can then be reconfigured, and then fill it with a mixture of compost, topsoil, and perlite, which is a natural mined material that you can buy in big bags. And here in the area where you and I garden, where we get a lot of rain, it's really important to have a lot of perlite in your raised bed to help with drainage, to help keep the soil light and loose. Plants really thrive when they have a lot of air being able to get to their roots and good drainage. And then for this year, you're just going to go out and you're going to buy your plants already started for you. There are some very high-quality garden centers in your area. If you're going to grow the kind of tomatoes that people really like, the good eating tomatoes, you also want to buy a roll of welded wire fencing, like a 25 or 50-foot roll, cut it into 6-foot lengths, turn those into tubes, cylinders, and then put one of those around each of your baby tomato plants and then stake the cylinder into the ground. That'll be your tomato cage. That'll hold this giant rambunctious vine. It'll keep all the tomatoes off the ground. It'll also keep everything into a nice 2-foot footprint so that you won't be using up too much space in your raised beds.
I see. That's a great idea.
Especially with tomatoes, it really helps you plan your space. And you want to leave a foot of open space around the outside of the cage. Peppers take up much less room. Cucumbers, I would urge you to trellis those as well. Maybe, you know, a smaller cage, or you'll find trellises for sale when you get your plants. Keeping the cucumbers off the ground is going to give you much better quality. It's also going to keep them straighter. And then as we get towards the end of summer and plants start to fail, the soil will still be warm. That's when you can pick a part of your raised bed and sow salad greens in it really thickly. And you can cut those, you know, the baby lettuces and spinaches, the leaf lettuces. You can cut those repeatedly, cut and come again style, for 3 or 4 harvests before winter shuts you down for the year. One thing I want you to do is go to our website, go to youbetyourgarden.org, go on Garden Answers A to Z, First thing I want you to go to is R for raised beds. It'll give you all the details of the construction and what to fill them with. And then read just a general simple article for everything you want to grow. Start small and add raised beds, more raised beds every year.
That sounds great. Thank you so much for all of your terrific help. I really appreciate it.
Well, we love people starting gardening. That's the best thing ever. Good luck, Warren.
All right, take care. Bye.
1-888-346-9499. Chris, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hey, Mike.
Hello, Chris. How are you?
I'm doing okay, thanks.
And where is Chris doing okay?
Mantua, New Jersey.
All right. Very good. What can we do for Chris in the Garden State?
The house I moved into 2-3 years ago, and first year was fine. And last year, midsummer, I started noticing little bumps in the soil. You just walk around and poof, you're stepping and, you know, it's real soft in certain areas more than others. But bottom line question, obviously, is what do you do about molds? I've talked to some neighbors and they all have different, you know, put poison worms down the holes and things like that. But at this point, I haven't done anything.
Now, let's first say that a lot of people misidentify the pest, but it sounds like you probably do have moles, M-O-L-E-S. Now, these are creatures who live their entire lives underground, essentially blind. They eat earthworms, Japanese beetle grubs, and cicada larvae underground. They're total carnivores. They're like teenage boys. They don't eat any plant material. And they make raised tunnels. And because they have excavated the soil from underneath the tunnel, the soil is often very soft there.
Right.
The other creature that people mistake moles for is the vole, V-O-L-E. And these are very small rat-like creatures, less than the size of a mouse, but elongated. They live both under the ground and on the surface of the ground. They make little lanes and lawns, but they don't make underground tunnels. But they're known for eating bulbs and corms and rhizomes and the roots of plants. A lot of times something like a hosta will just keel over, and when you do the CSI on it, there's no roots left underground. So glad you brought up the poison worms. All they do is poison children and pets and birds. Moles will only eat live food. They won't eat these gummy worms. Can you imagine having poison gummy worms just around? Moles will kick them out of their habitat, and then they're laying on the surface of the soil, and some little kid who's 3 years old. And dogs will eat anything. So
right.
These are very dangerous. They should not be sold, and it's foolish to use them. Mothballs, another quote remedy, are incredibly toxic to you and to the soil. They're like kidney cancer on a stick, and they're not going to hurt the moles. So the first thing that we generally urge people to try is castor oil. There are concentrated castor oil products for sale in hipper garden centers and online, and these are available both dry and wet. And you spread it on the lawn, the yard, the area where you see the tunnels. And as it rains, the smell of the castor oil gets down into the subsoil, and the moles can't stand it. And if they have an easy place to move to, they will go there. So that's the non-fatal, non-toxic. It's just making the soil smell bad for the moles.
And that's just ordinary castor oil you buy at a drugstore?
No. The castor oil that humans use has been deodorized. In the old days, those of us of my age, you remember when our grandparents gave it to us, theoretically for health reasons, but it was really because we misbehaved, the smell and the taste were terrible. So modern castor oil's been deodorized. You need the odorized.
Odorized castor oil.
And yeah.
And any home and garden place to get that.
Exactly. And then, full disclosure, these people have underwritten the show at various times. But there is a company, I can't remember their company name, even though they've underwritten the show. But the name of the product is called Mole Zap. What it is it's a specially designed set of CO2 cartridges. And what you do, you close up all of their entrance and exit holes except one, and then you fit this device over the top of the hole, and you use the CO2 cartridges, and it displaces the oxygen in their underground runs. And it is okay. fatal for the mole. They go to sleep and they don't wake up. But you're not pumping poison down into the ground. You're not endangering anything else.
Right.
And this is what you would turn to if the castor oil didn't chase them over to your neighbor's lawn.
All right. One of those two should do the trick.
Get that castor oil down now. Displace them before they start breeding. And that's your best shot, man.
All right. Thank you very much. I appreciate it, Mike.
Take care.
Bye-bye now.
All right, as promised, it's time for the question of the week. Dealing with weeds in walkways. Walk this way, Alexis Landis. Would you get us started by reading this week's question?
Sure, Mike. Newbie in Alexandria writes, I've been searching for a responsible way to keep my very large brick terrace free of weeds. All the advice I can find is about weeds in garden beds or lawns, not growing up between bricks. I tried pulling the weeds out by hand after a good rain, but they keep returning.
Well, newbie, nature abhors a vacuum, and nature really seems to love filling in those little spaces between bricks and pavers with her favorite plants, which might not be yours. Now, forget hand pulling. It's a never-ending battle, and long term, it's just going to wear out your back and knees. But when and if you do hand pull, be sure and compost those weeds. Lots of good nutrients in those unwanted plants. And instead of pulling, think about still using the loosening power of water without getting physical. Very sharp streams of water, like from a pressure washer, will blast out the actual plants and all the soil and little bits of schmutz in the cracks that allow new weeds to germinate. And it keeps the bricks nice and clean.
Newbie's email isn't over. He continues, I've had some success with a homemade weed killer using horticultural vinegar, but the weeds always come back.
Well, vinegars labeled as horticultural have a much higher level of acidity than grocery store vinegar, typically 8 to 20% acidity versus the store-bought 5%. Used on a hot and dry day, they are very effective at killing any plants they soak, but they work best at full strength. Not in any kind of homemade mixture. And be careful. You must wear eye protection and keep children and pets away from the area while you're spraying. Vinegar isn't toxic, but you don't want to get it in anybody's eyes.
One of the newer iron-based herbicides would seem to be a much safer choice.
You're absolutely right. And iron-based herbicides are much easier to find online and at retail. Look for the letters HEDTA or FE. HEDTA as the active ingredient on their product labels.
All right, and now we conclude the tale of Newbie's search for a responsible way to keep his brick terrace free of weeds. In his final comments, he wonders if high-strength horticultural vinegar followed by corn gluten meal might work.
You know, my answer is going to be the one I was always told by our consultants not to use back when I was a manager of a large staff of people. Yes, but.
Hold on. You were a manager?
Yep, and a darn poor one, too. The magazine I was running did very well, but the morale was so low my staff could have crawled underneath a snake with a high hat on.
Why would a snake be wearing a hat?
And that's why we love you so. Now, high-strength vinegar will kill existing weeds, especially in hot and dry conditions. Again, be sure to wear eye protection. Or as Alexis has noted, use one of the new iron-based herbicides for the initial knockdown instead. Then a dusting of the correct amount of corn gluten meal should prevent any new weed seeds from germinating for about 6 weeks. So if you want a head-on fight, this is a well-planned one. But I'd rather take a cue from the champ's famous rumble in the jungle and play rope-a-dope instead.
You and your boxing references. You mean you want Newbie to lay back and do nothing for 7 rounds?
Just the opposite. I want him to plant those areas deliberately instead. Again, the essential problem here is that nature abhors a vacuum, and plants love to grow in those tiny little crevices between bricks and pavers, making almost any, quote, solution an endlessly repetitive task. As Ozymandias once noted, all solutions are temporary. Or is that the slogan for duct tape?
Michael!
Oh, okay. All right. So instead of fighting nature head on, consider deliberately growing attractive and useful plants in those gaps. There are at least two lines of branded plants sold precisely for this purpose. Steppables and Jeepers Creepers. I don't name them, folks. I just report them. Some of these plants are sold as potential lawn replacements, but a good number are tough and low-growing, gap-filling wonders, including some that are fragrant when you walk on them.
Are these plants exclusive to those companies?
Jeepers, no, Supergirl! But these brands have done a lot to promote the idea of using plants in these problem places. And you can do a lot of preliminary research on the plants that might work best for you just by searching each company's offerings online. And wherever you get the plants, the bottom line is that the best answer here is to fill the spaces between bricks and pavers with low-growing perennial ground covers of your choice. I really like low-growing herbs for this purpose, especially creeping thyme and lemon thyme, and many other thymes, as they release a pleasant scent when you walk on them. I actually had this happen for me accidentally when some lemon thyme growing in a big barrel self-seeded an open area between pavers and our patio. You can also use low-growing sedges and sedums, the latter the anchor plant of green roof systems. There's a lot of good plants for this use. Well, that sure was some interesting information about walkway weeds now, wasn't it? Luckily for you, the question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website. To read it over in detail, just click the link for the question of the week at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Gardens Alive supports the You Bet Your Garden question of the week. Yikes, my producer is threatening to improperly put plantain in my patio if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499. Or send us your email, you're tired, you're poor, you're wretched, refuse teeming towards our garden shore, at garden@whyy.org. Please include your location. And visit our website, youbetyourgarden.org, where you will find the answers to all those garden questions you are going to send us. Audio of this show, past shows, and our podcast. Elizabeth Perez Luna is executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Ken Queter plays our theme song. Our engineer this week is Al Banks. Our social media director is Amanda McGrath. Check out her fine work at the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. Larissa Sapko and Rich Banowitz keep our website creeping along. Our own weed-free walkway, Alexis Landis, produces You Bet Your Garden for WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. Our editor, Al Banks, says, if I could walk that way, I wouldn't need the Preparation H. Having never been personally exposed to vaudeville, our intern, Michael Inglés, continues to wonder what the devil I'm talking about. You know, maybe so does Al and Alexis and I'm here all week, Mike McGrath. I will remind you to tip your waiter, waitress, or valet Parker, but do not try the veal. It's quite nasty. And I will now time travel and walk into a pharmacy to do the setup for Al's joke before, or since it's time travel, this might be after, I see you again next week. Druggist, do you carry Preparation H? Why, certainly, sir. Just walk this way. Flea beetles are the bane of eggplant growers. I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next You Bet Your Garden, we'll reveal another potential way to beat the beetles. Plus your fabulous phone calls.